So something we've heard about in this meeting, particularly yesterday, was the idea that there is an underlying discreteness of space in the form of something that you can picture as atoms of space. And I want to push this idea in a certain direction, which is to think of a cosmologically relevant universe as a kind of condensate of these atoms of space. So there's a certain collection of these elementary building blocks, which is in a type of coherent state, which is similar to what you have in a Bose-Einstein condensate. And the idea is that this gives you a description that can be interpreted as a spatially homogeneous and macroscopic universe. And I want to extract something like cosmological dynamics for these kind of kinds of universe. And so this is something I've explored with Daniele Oriti and Lorenzo Sindoni. So here are the references, and we're still working on it. So here's my introduction and motivation slide. So I think it's fair to say that it has been a major challenge for various contenders that we have for the theory of quantum gravity. So here I'm listing string theory, loop quantum gravity, causal dynamical triangulations. Of course, there are many more. The challenge has been to connect to early universe cosmology, so to really address questions that are most relevant right after the Big Bang, right? What happens to the singularity? This is something that we really want to understand in quantum gravity, and it's also a very natural starting point if we think about possible experimental signatures, observational signatures of any theory of quantum gravity. So this is what I want to address here. The framework I'm focusing on is loop quantum gravity in a loose sense. So I'm thinking of a kinematical Hilbert space that comes from loop quantum gravity in some way, and then you define the dynamics in terms of a spinform model. We've heard about spinform models in some other talks, and that basically gives you a sum over histories, transition amplitude, or a kind of partition function, and a way of getting it and defining it is in terms of a standard quantum field theory that is known as group field theory. So what group field theory does is basically it defines the spinform model through a Feynman amplitude. So I can associate to any kind of discrete space-time history a transition amplitude that comes from the Feynman amplitude of the GFT. GFT is group field theory. So the advantage of using such a formulation is that because you have a standard quantum field theory, you can now apply tools and intuition from other situations in physics where quantum field theory is important. And of course, there are many such situations. And what I want to think about here is, as I said, the physics of Bose-Einstein condensates and the use of certain types of coherent states. So here's the key idea. To say it again, we want to describe a macroscopic and spatially homogeneous universe as a collection of many quantum geometric degrees of freedom that you can think of as atoms of space, and these are assumed to be in a type of coherent state that forms a condensate. And you can think of Bose-Einstein condensates, or you can think of QED, where you can describe certain macroscopic electromagnetic fields through a type of squeezed state. And so here's a diagram that illustrates the direction that we are going. So how to do quantum cosmology? Normally, we are on the right-hand side of this diagram. So basically, you start with your favorite classical theory, for example, GR and some inflaton with its potential. Then you assume that the universe is in a certain configuration, which is usually spatially homogeneous with some small perturbations, can be isotropic. You can add anisotropies if you want. So this is an assumption, a type of ansatz, at the classical level, which reduces you to classical, what I call cosmological dynamics. So usually this is the Friedmann equation for the background, and then some equations for the perturbations. And then you would start quantizing by some kind of quantization scheme, whatever that means, and you end up with a quantum cosmology model. And in the kind of classic Wheeler-DeWitt type interpretation, you have a wave function of the universe that depends on these cosmological parameters, and then a Hamiltonian constraint. So this is well known. And we want to basically start from the opposite direction. So we have a quantum theory, which is this group field theory model, which we think could be a candidate theory for quantum gravity. which is of course very complicated. So we make an ansatz, an assumption for a state that could be a good approximation to a physical state, which depends on some kind of wave function psi, and the interpretation will be analogous to what we did here on the classical side, which is basically spatially homogeneous. That reduces the equations of our quantum theory to equations for this class of state that are defined by this kind of wave function. And the main technical tool to extract these kind of quantum dynamics is to look at the Schwinger-Dyson equations of the quantum field theory. Then this is still horribly complicated. So you do some approximations and you end up with something here that I call effective cosmological dynamics. So these are, in general, nonlinear equations, differential equations for this wave function psi. And the proposal is to interpret them in the same way that we interpreted this Wheeler-DeWitt equation, and to kind of compare whether the equations you get here have anything to do with something that you could derive from GR, so that hopefully this tells you something about your fundamental theory. So that's the program. And in my 9.5 minutes, I will tell you a bit more about the details of how this works. So I told you that you have this quantum field theory formulation in terms of group field theory, and that gives you a Fock space structure. So you start with a vacuum, which is basically the Ashtekar-Lewandowski vacuum that Bianca talked about yesterday, which gives you a completely degenerate geometry. So basically a universe where the metric is zero. So that's the vacuum here. And then you can build a Fock space. You can build excitations over this vacuum in the standard way. So you have a quantum field phi, and you have the Hermitian conjugate phi dagger, which is basically a superposition of creation operators. So when that acts on the vacuum, you create an elementary excitation, which I'm interpreting as a tetrahedron. So that's the atom of space, if you want. And so this field depends on four group elements. So G1 to G4 are elements of a Lie group, and the interpretation of that is parallel transports of the gravitational connection. Again, this is something we saw in a couple of other talks yesterday. So you basically imagine four fundamental links here that are kind of dual to the faces of this tetrahedron, and the group elements tell you what the parallel transport would be using some kind of gravitational connection. So that's the formula. And so now you can also do a kind of Fourier transformation. You can go to a dual representation, a kind of momentum space picture, and then the variable would be the metric because that's canonically conjugate to the connection. Okay, so in loop quantum gravity spin network language, this is just a four-valent vertex, which is dual to this tetrahedron. And now you can go on and build up the whole Fock space. And so this would be a Fock space of arbitrarily complicated four-valent spin networks, which are just the many particle states in this GFT Fock space. So in this sense, this GFT formulation gives you a second quantization of loop quantum gravity. And I should stress that the states are not physical. This is just a kinematical Fock space, and I still have to impose some form of dynamics. And so that's what I will do later. Here are just some examples of these coherent states that we call condensates. This is basically just by analogy with what you do in quantum optics on Bose-Einstein condensates. So you have this field operator here, and you introduce some kind of arbitrary wave function sigma. You integrate, so this gives you a general one-particle creation operator. Then you take the exponential, and you act on the vacuum with that. And what that gives you is a kind of gas of tetrahedra, so you can think of all these atoms of space, which are all in the same microscopic quantum state, which is exactly what would also happen, at least in the simplest approximation, in the real condensates. And so this quantity sigma here is the so-called condensate wave function, which fully determines the state. So the state just depends on sigma. Here's a slightly more complicated version of that, where I'm starting with a two-particle operator. So I'm creating two tetrahedra, and then I'm doing a pairwise identification. So I'm gluing the faces together to get a sort of molecule. And again, there's this wave function, which is called psi here, which is arbitrary. And now I'm generating a gas of these molecules. So you can think of this as a state which already has some limited form of two-particle correlations. Now you can go on and build more complicated things, but these are just the most basic examples. So the idea is really that you have this condensate, and there's all these atoms or molecules, And because they're all in the same microscopic quantum state, the universe looks spatially homogeneous. You can make this more formal and concrete, but of course I don't have time for that. So I'll just show you how to get to quantum cosmology equations. So the claim was that the quantum dynamics of these condensate states describes an effective quantum cosmology model for a universe that's homogeneous, but generally anisotropic. I haven't talked about isotropy here, so I can generate all kinds of anisotropic universes. And so now the kind of effective dynamics that we derive from the proposal for quantum gravity comes from these Schwinger-Dyson equations. So I can compute expectation values of this type, so always some observable, so some functional of the field and the complex conjugate, and S is the action of the group field theory. So somebody gives you an action for the group field theory, for example, from the spinform model or by some other means, and you can stick it in here, and then you can compute this expectation value. And this should be zero for a physical state. And here psi is just the label that reminds you that the state depends on this condensate wave function. And so what you now get would be conditions, so you can, for arbitrary choices of these observables, or you get arbitrarily many conditions, which are nonlinear and non-local differential equations in general, which would have to be solved by this condensate wave function, psi. And so now the point is that this function is, of course, not a function on space or on space-time, because there is no background space or space-time, but it's a function on this space of group elements. And the group elements give you the space of the possible geometries of one tetrahedron, as I told you in the beginning. And so if you're in the condensate where space is filled with all these identical tetrahedra, this is exactly the space of the possible geometries of a homogeneous universe, which is just a mini superspace in the usual nomenclature. So that gives you a way of interpreting this wave function psi as a quantum cosmology wave function, which lives on this mini superspace. And so, as I told you, what you get is normally nonlinear, and so it's not clear how to interpret that in a kind of Wheeler-DeWitt way, but you can look at special cases in which the equations are linear, and then the relation to the more conventional quantum cosmology is more direct. So there's one case that we've looked at, which is you take this gas of molecules, you have to make some assumptions on the potential of this GFT model, and then you obtain this very general linear equation. So this is completely general. K is just the kinetic operator that appears in the quadratic part of the action, can be non-local, so that's why you get this integral. And here there's this wave function. And so in most models, you would restrict to a local kinetic term, and then the integral disappears, and you just get this type of equation, which is now in the normal Wheeler-DeWitt form, and this K directly plays the role of a Hamiltonian constraint. So I should just stress again that we are not assuming this kind of equation, but we are really deriving it from a more fundamental proposal for the dynamics of the quantum gravity degrees of freedom by just putting in a certain guess of what the state could be. Of course, this is just one condition, and there would be many, many more. So this is just this is a truncation we're doing here. That's right. So that's the one appearing here. That's right. That's right. In the same way that in the Gross-Pitayevsky equation, normally you have an object that is also called the condensate wave function, which is not, strictly speaking, a quantum, first so quantized sense, wave function.
In that sense, it's really not like the Wheeler-DeWitt equation.
That's right. So there is a little jump here in the interpretation. That's right. That's supported by the fact that in general these equations are nonlinear. So you have to think about how to deal with nonlinear equations of motion.
If you should think of it as the Hamilton-Jacobi equation of classical theory instead of as the Wheeler-DeWitt equation?
At this stage, you're still fully quantum. You haven't said anything about semi-classical behavior or anything like that. So it's, we can talk about it maybe later. Okay, so I have how much time? 2 minutes. So let me just show you some results. So now you can play with these equations. You can see what they tell you. The most basic thing we have done is to look at a semi-classical WKB limit of these type of equations. So again, just to repeat, we're looking at a certain class of these condensate states in group field theory. Here, of course, we have to make an assumption of what the kinetic operator is. So here, to get something non-trivial, you need something with derivatives. And one natural choice is to look at this kind of Laplacian term plus a mass term. And then what we can show is that there is the semi-classical WKB limit, which gives, in the simplest case, something like a Friedmann equation for isotropic universes. So here, just here's just a list of things that we've done. So of course, this is just a very, very basic check where you do the simplest kind of semi-classical limit. But so normally, this is just an isotropic homogeneous vacuum universe. What we can do is we can look at either Lorentzian or Riemannian signature, which corresponds to a choice of the gauge group. So SL2C would be Lorentzian, spin 4 is Riemannian. And indeed, what you get in this kind of effective Friedmann equation corresponds to the change of signature you would expect. We can introduce a massless free scalar field by just putting an additional variable basically on the vertex of the tetrahedron. And if you extend the formalism in the most straightforward way, you find that it's really that it appears in the Friedmann equation as a massless and free scalar field with the right coupling to gravity. This is more speculative, so you can find a cosmological constant if you change the ensemble of states. So I haven't really told you anything about the size of these tetrahedra, right? There are these atoms of space, but they can be huge in principle. So now if you insist that they should be close to Planckian, and then you change the ensemble of states, you introduce an additional constraint, then this additional term that basically corresponds to this constraint appears to be like a cosmological constant. But this is pretty much the work in progress. So let me finish here with the summary slide. So my point is that spatially homogeneous universes can be described in one approach, at least, to background-independent quantum gravity in terms of this condensate of atoms or molecules of space. What we used for that was this group field theory formulation of loop quantum gravity, which gives you quantum field theory methods that allow you to define states and treat them with methods that you know from the literature, from other situations. And we've computed an effective dynamics for this condensate wave function, which we interpret as a quantum cosmology model. Then the main result at this stage is that a certain semi-classical limit, with some assumptions obviously, corresponds to a Friedmann equation. So this is promising, but of course we have to do much, much more. So there are many open issues here, cosmological issues. Of course, homogeneous universes are very boring from the perspective of cosmology. We have to introduce inhomogeneities, and it's not very clear how to do that. There are many approximations, and in principle, from a physical perspective, you would not really expect this regime in which you have these weakly interacting molecules or atoms to be a good approximation when you actually approach the Big Bang. So it's the expectation would be that these approximations break down as you go to higher curvature. It would be nice to have explicit solutions. And there are many theoretical issues. So for example, what we would like to do is to compare with other proposals for vacua and LQG. So for example, the one that Bianca has introduced yesterday. And also in connection to this breakdown of approximations, what you would expect also from looking at the BEC is some kind of phase transition. And so ideally, you would have to develop methods in which you can study this kind of phase transition. In the context of this fundamental GFT. Thank you.